Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Raising Playful Tots is a weekly podcast about mums making the most of early years playtime. I'm your host, Melissa. Welcome to the play space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours. You have children under 5 years old? This is the podcast for you. Introduce a new play idea. Welcome to Raising Playful Tots. Glad you could stop by today. If you're new to the show, welcome, and hi to the regular playmates. There's plenty of room on the table here as we put together a homemade marble run. Last week's show, I shared an interview with Dan Miller about the merits of starting your own family mission statement, planning our family fun with our family in mind with a specific aim. So if you've missed that one and want to hear it, pop over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at www.raisingplayfultots.com/shows. This week's show, we return to one of our favourite topics of sensory play with Sue Gascoigne. I hope you'll stick around. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave feedback about the show on iTunes, and I'll be right back after this short break.
Stick a doodle shortbread, fudgy nut bars. How many cheeks? Stick a doodle shortbread, fudgy nut bars. How many cheeks in the cookie jar? One.
Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You've mentioned briefly about the muddy puddle. What's so magical about a muddy puddle?
Oh, I wish I could remember, like the lady that I mentioned, I wish I could remember back to what I felt. But when I watch children absorbed in a muddy puddle, I also wish I could have an insight into what's going on in their minds. I could draw thought bubbles, but I would potentially be guessing. This idea of the muddy puddle really came to the fore in my mind when I was visiting a play area on a very cold and wet February day with my two children aged 5 and 8. And it was one of those moments of trying to combine work and do something pleasurable and trying to make something fun for the children. And it was a seaside, a play area next to the seaside. And the play area was fairly well equipped, but interestingly, there wasn't a single child on the play equipment. Hmm. But in the middle of the play area was this muddy puddle. And I'm looking at a gorgeous picture now of it. There were five, at any one time, there was about five children of a complete, across the spectrum of their ages, standing in the puddle, pointing at the puddle and talking about it. Very young children bent right down, probing it with their fingers, crouching down. There's another boy who wasn't necessarily dressed that appropriately, but was with some very enlightened childminders who didn't mind at all. And he is there with his feet semi-submerged in this now very mixed up puddle, so he can't see half of his feet, and he's just staring deeply at his feet. And I don't know, there is the challenge of this puddle, the fascination, the cause and effect, the fact that this puddle started off transparent, and by them moving their own bodies, the puddle, the mud at the bottom of the puddle stirred up, and they changed the look and the feel of the puddle. There's so many different things there's almost potentially an assault on the senses. These children that I was observing were completely mud encrusted. It was a very, very cold day. So no doubt they were feeling the coldness of the water. Those of them that had welly boots on. The water had definitely gone over the top of those. So if, like that mother, they were feeling that coldness, the squelchiness, many of them were taking runs up to the puddle and big jumps and splashing in. It's not, unfortunately, regrettably, it's not possible for me to completely put my finger on exactly what each of those children were getting out of it. But what was deeply apparent was their concentration, the focus, how it brought the children across the ages together, how it fascinated them. And I believe it's a part of making learning real, really. Things like this, things like climbing a tree and them understanding balance and gravity. To me, there is a lot of problem solving opportunities that come into it. But who knows? There could have been role play. There could have been creativity. I guess what's so wonderful about that muddy puddle is it could be whatever they wanted it to be.
Oh, exactly. That's just so amazing to think about. A muddy puddle can be just as useful as, you know, a book. Or, you know, the handheld game that everybody holds dear to their heart, there are so many ways that you can play that you just can't compare them. And so I think on the scale of ranking a muddy puddle, you might have put it quite low down, as in, you know, it's a muddy puddle. It's good. But, you know, it's just, like you said, finding a balance, finding something that's different and that you can slow down and you can try, and seeing that there's value in a muddy puddle as much as there is value in a book or doing some other craft type activity with your child.
Absolutely. And I think at this financial time, it's lovely and reassuring to know that a resource like a muddy puddle is free. Freely available, and we have quite a lot of it in this country, so you know, we're quite well endowed. And, I mean, similarly, I had a very similar experience going to a children's play area, a very gorgeous play area with lovely wooden equipment that was in a zoo, a very busy play area potentially, but again the play equipment was completely empty. And what were all the children on? They were on a tree root that was in the corner of the play area. It was actually in Colchester, at the zoo there. And this one tree root was amazing. It captivated about 8 children, again, a full spectrum of ages. The root side of the tree root formed a fantastic climbing frame. And it was brilliant because it was age appropriate to the different age children, because depending on which route up that climbing frame they chose to take was determined the difficulty of it. The other side of the tree trunk, where it formed, it would have joined sort of like the tree trunk itself, formed a slide. Now, there was no sign on it, no markings that said this is a slide. There was just a straight sloping surface. And what was really interesting was it actually formed 2 different ability slides, a really sort of heart thumping, almost perpendicular slide, and one that was slightly more graduated, which the younger children used. And then if you went round sort of the other end of the tree trunk again, it formed a den where there was little bits of bark from the tree root, and a 5-year-old was using it for foraging. They were foraging. They formed a den in this area. They were collecting. I mean, this one same tree root was amazing. All things to all of those children. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not suggesting we can all go out and buy a big tree root to put in our gardens, but I think when we're thinking about things like our, you know, if we're lucky enough to have an outside space, a beautifully mown, perfect bit of lawn and perfectly kept flower beds is not necessarily going to be the most sensory enriching resource for children.
Yes.
But something with a bit of undulations in, and maybe a different planting that will appeal to different senses could offer them a completely different sensory-rich experience. And at the end of the day, when if you think about your average toy shop that a child might go into, the one sense that it would be appealing to, would most appealing to, would be our visual sense. And a lot of stuff that happens, a lot of things that children play with, the screen-based culture is very visually focused. And what we're talking about with real sensory-rich play, including the treasure basket, is our resources that appeal to all of those senses. So coming back to where we started, really, but not just those, not just the visual sense, not just the five senses that we tend to talk about, but also that proprioceptive sense, the kinesthetic, the vestibular. There's lots of them. They all sound very jargony, but at the end of the day, they are fantastically important senses for children's growth and development.
You're right. I was reading about your awards for the prestigious Practical Preschool Gold Award. Congratulations.
Thank you.
For your sensory collection, and that in just 2 years of trading, you've reached the finals of 10 prestigious national awards, and you've won 5.
It's actually increased. I think it's 13 now, and we won 8.
Oh, wow. Even more. Wow, well done. You must have a lot to say to mothers who have to work outside the home with paid work. I mean, of course, we all work.
Yeah.
You've been busy building a business, speaking, consulting, and winning awards, along with raising a young family. So during this time, what would be your top tips for raising a playful tot?
Wow. Well, I'd first like to start with saying how challenging it is for us all to juggle, you know, the playfulness and our requirements to sort of the serious side of our lives, I guess, and therefore the importance of us not being too hard on ourselves, because otherwise I think we can get into a vicious circle. And I think sensory play is all about having fun and being at one with the resources that we're experiencing. And it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't go hand in hand with us worrying about stuff.
Yes.
So I think that's a really important thing.
Yeah.
And we can't all be perfect all of the time. Right. So, but I think, what I found has helped me is about being open-ended and open-minded about the potential for awe and wonder that children might find in the simplest of things. And I guess I'm quite lucky. I have, I'm naturally, drawn to problem solving, and therefore I tend to look at objects myself and think about how I could use them in different ways, or how children might use them in different ways. But you know, I never cease to be amazed by how children do respond to these different resources. But I think being open-minded and willing to watch, listen and learn, I think is a really crucial thing. And part and parcel of that, I think, is about being prepared, and we've sort of touched on this, but being prepared to take a step back to reflect and to think about what they might be doing and why they might be doing it, and what's so important to them and what are they getting out of it. Because, you know, something that might appear very trivial, if you see how much they're engrossed in something as trivial as a woven coaster in a treasure basket, or a bowl of sand that can engross children for, you know, 1 to 3 hours, it starts to make you think something's going on here that's beyond the obvious. So I think being able to sort of take that step back to just sort of watch. And I think it's what's worked for me is offering children open-ended resources. Clearly, as you've touched upon, the fact that we actually do produce treasure baskets ourselves means that my children have been offered treasure baskets throughout their lives. That doesn't mean they haven't been offered other toys as well, but they have had that opportunity to play in abundance with very sensory rich resources that are open-ended, that therefore they have the potential to use and shape and grow with. So I think that's really important. And finally, about having fun and delighting in the, your children's fun that they're experiencing. I think somebody, I think actually it's in the Brenda Crowe book that I mentioned, that she talks about, for even amongst us, the reluctant messy players amongst us. And, you know, and I'm not that keen on really having mud up my fingernails and all of that side of things, although I regularly help out with Forest Schools. But she talks about how even all of us probably at one point in our life have got so absolutely soaking wet that we get to the point where we don't care.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that's what children, that's possibly the closest we can get to experiencing what it's like to be a child experiencing those same sensory rich experiences, that the feelings override that sort of our brains, I guess.
Yes. They're brilliant. Thanks for that. Looking at your website, it's not the typical site of just a newsletter to sign up for and a PDF catalog full of your products. You've got lots of information and ideas for families and childcare providers to use. You've got sections for local authorities or school districts, so special educational needs, parents, primary schools and elementary schools, nurseries and preschools. Clearly, you've thought about each group and you offer easy-to-find resources for each group, which is, like I said, really unusual for most websites. You have to hunt around.
Yeah.
So when I was looking around your website and getting all excited about all of your products, I saw Sensory Tales, and that looks just fabulous. Can you tell us about Sensory Tales?
Yes, they're one of our latest products, and what's lovely about them is they were born out of my own children, as my own children are the inspiration for many of our resources. But these ones, it was during the long summer holidays, and my oldest child, oldest daughter, who's 8, was doing a reading challenge. So we'd gone to the library, and we happened to come across a gorgeous book, which was We're Riding on a Caravan,
yes,
by Laurie Krebs. And we read it at home. And just to see the engagement and the delight that my own children, aged 5 and 8, and myself got from this book, I felt there's something incredible about this beautiful multicultural book. So I wanted to find out more about these books. And I got hold of some more in the same range, and they're all absolutely wonderful multicultural books with beautiful illustrations. They all have lots of facts at the back of the books, which is really empowering for us as parents. If you're reading a story about Galapagos, you're going to, if you're worrying about when you're going to be asked the question, where is Galapagos or what was the Silk Road, there's lots of information there. But equally, there's lots of information that would appeal to the older child that you might be reading to. So again, it's great for those mixed age reading sort of moments. It was out of that experience that what occurred to me was, I think that with the addition of some sensory-rich resources, this book could be brought even more to life and made even more real and accessible for children across the spectrum, but also for children with special educational needs. And the whole kernel behind this one, this whole set of resources, was because I'd actually acquired some silk cocoons. And as you know, the focus of a lot of our resources on is very natural, sensory-rich, yes, resources.
Yes.
And I just thought, how wonderful. So we were reading the book, and I ran and got the silk cocoons to show to my children, because this story about the caravan is all about a story about travelling along the Silk Road in China, ancient China, trading bolts of beautiful, rich fabric of silk. And there's a story of silk in the back of the book. And when I showed the children this silk, and then I found a silk purse so they could actually see what the silk cocoons would make, you know, it really enriched the book and the experience. And so I set about at developing 8 sets of books with a lovely bag that displays them and stores everything, and a series of multi-sensory artifacts and musical instruments for children to complement the resource, to complement the book, and then lots of activity ideas, because I wanted the resource to be something to encourage real family bonding and quite sort of precious moments in a family and also in primary schools and nurseries and with childminders. And so it was lots and lots of different activity ideas for bringing the senses to life. So, for example, for each of the stories, the one sense that I can't promote through the artifacts that come with the stories is obviously the sense of taste.
Yes.
And so for each of them, it includes examples of traditional foods from that country. And what I've tried to do is I've tried to include a food that children would still would be able to access in this country. So, say, bananas or mangoes, although sadly not many may still have not experienced themselves. Mm. But also, I've tried to include examples of other traditional foods that they may not want to access, but would really appeal to boys and those who like gory foods like turtle soup cooked in its own blood or goat's head soup and things like that, which will really engross and engage children.
Yes.
So what I feel we've got is a resource that is appealing. We've had babies right through to 10-year-olds and adults. I've had parents buy these resources for themselves, not even for their children. I feel that it's a resource that's really bringing stories to life and making some magical moments and a magical sharing of time across the ages.
No, that's I love the way you summarized that and explained it, because I mean, when I just saw the products, I just thought that is just perfect. Everything together, all in one place, and just an ideal way of showing how well you can use the senses for so many different levels of play. And your website is just full of products that are like that. I mean, not just the sensory tales, but you have all sorts of products that are for the whole age range of the under fives. And you've tied it to the EYF. S as well, which is that's the early years
foundation stage, and that's been really vital, because I think particularly in primary schools, where you know play is acceptable in reception classes and perhaps a little bit in year one as a treat if the children have worked hard in the morning, but it's quite often seen as quite a distinct thing to everyday schoolwork. Whereas I actually believe most of the curriculum can be delivered through play.
Yes.
And so to me it's really important. That's a really empowering way to show practitioners how they can meet their objectives in a fun way that's led by children. And for us parents, I think we may hear about this curriculum and stuff that's in the newspaper, a lot of scaremongering as well. But I think it shows us that, you know, this is valuable, this is really good, this is really going to help your child develop holistically as a whole person. Something to be slavishly followed, but something that's going to naturally enrich them.
Excellent. Thank you, Sue, for talking to us today about sensory play.
Thank you for having me.
Today I've been talking to Sue Gascoigne of playtoz.co.uk. That's playtoz.co.uk, about sensory play. She has a wealth of information, resources, and a blog all about sensory play. She ships internationally too. So don't worry if you've missed any of the links that we've talked about in today's interview. You can visit the website raisingplayfultots.com and it will be right there in the show notes. I'll be right back after this short break.
This is Blythe Lipman, author of Help! My Baby Actions on Raising Playful Tots.
Welcome back to the show. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Sue Gascoigne there from playtoz.co.uk, all about sensory play. I wonder if you could help me. I love bringing you interesting guests and topics, just like what we've had now with Sue Gascoigne there, and it would be heaps better if I could bring in people that could speak to your concerns, the things that you are wondering about, the things that you would like to learn more about. You know, what do you need for inspiration? So I have a really short survey I would love for you to do. I know that there's a lot of you out there who listen and haven't ever responded. I'd love you to pause the podcast now and go on over, do me a favor, go on over now to raisingplayfultots.com/survey and take the really short survey that we've got there. It'll take less than 5 minutes to give your feedback. You don't have to leave your name and email. You can if you want to. It's completely optional. It would be a fun way of me finding out what you would like to know more about. Come on, it'll take less than 5 minutes. I sent out the survey earlier this week to those people that were already subscribed to the newsletter, and I've had some really interesting responses. And so because of the thoughts that people have put down there, I've got some really good episodes coming up in the future, episodes that I know that you will really like because of that input. So go on, nip on over now to raisingplayfultots.com/survey and fill in the quick survey. Oh, and remember to come back and listen to the rest. I just finished the 31 Days to a More Playful Tot series on the Play Activities blog. You can find that at play-activities.com/blog. And if you want to go to the 31 Day series, you could just put after blog, you would put /31 days, or you can just do a search for that on the blog. I hope you got a chance to experience that in January. I wrote a post for each day on ways that we can be more playful with our tots, and I didn't focus just on the activities that we can do, but as we are the gatekeepers to the playful experiences that our children have, I focus more on what we could do as the carers in that situation, how we can properly equip ourselves emotionally, physically, what we can do to make sure that our little ones can have more playful experiences. I'm thinking about putting this 31-day series into a short course that has more opportunities for some growth to happen with us. It's really nice to have these short little ideas, but sometimes we want to think a little bit more about them and actually work on aspects of that for ourselves. So I was thinking of doing a short e-course that would have a few tasks in there, as well as the blog posts that were there, a little bit of follow-up so that we've got something to work on. This year is a year of growth, and it was a really exciting time for me to actually put down some of these ideas for the 31 Days for a More Playful Tot series, and I think you would really enjoy looking at some of those yourselves. So I'm really interested in feedback about that. Would this be something that anyone would be interested in doing, a short course on 31 Days to a More Playful Tot? Let me know. I really want to hear your comments. Did you like the show? Did you like the topic? What would you like to see? Get in touch via the show notes, Twitter, Facebook, or email. I hope you've had a really brilliant week. If you're looking for some play activities to do this week, I would really encourage you to check out some of the collaborative boards on Pinterest. I've talked about Pinterest in last week's show, P-I-N-T-E-R-E-S-T, Pinterest.com. I've been finding some really good activities there. One of the collaborative boards that I really would encourage you to go to is one by Play Dr. Mum called Kid Blogger Network Activities Crafts. It's chock full of lots of different activities. You can just kind of browse through the whole thing and see different things that you can do there. I'll give you an example. This week, my youngest and I found a pineapple cake recipe. Okay, I found the pineapple cake recipe. I had some pineapples and I fancied making a cake, and so I was able to look it up. And there was a lot of measuring in there, a lot of pouring, a lot of stirring, spray the container, then dump, which is just perfect for my 3.5-year-old to do. We did it together, and he was able to stir and have a grand old time with the wooden spoon and pour and dump and stir and all of those things. He was super smiley at dessert time as everyone was thanking him for his stirring duties during the whole process. I'm also thankful for Pinterest for the homework stations that I'm able to do for the two older boys. Now I have one place where all those letters go that come home from school, all those homework sheets, all those things to do with it, their homework. They have a timetable. They have a whole area that's set up on the wall for them to
everything has a place. It's also, Pinterest is also a good place if you're looking for specific play ideas. So let's say you've noticed that your child, or you want your child to do some more sharing type activities, or you're fed up with the Play-Doh activities that you're currently doing and you want to find something else to do with Play-Doh because your child really likes it, or maybe they don't like Play-Doh at all and you want to find a way in, a new way of doing Play-Doh. Or nature activities. It's that time of year where you want to be outside. It's not wet and windy, it's just cold, but you really want to be outside. You can actually use Pinterest like a search engine and go there and type in a keyword, and then you will see visually all these ideas and you'll be able to repin them yourself. So you kind of have a virtual scrapbook of ideas. I would really encourage you to have a look at Pinterest as a visual way of finding new ideas for play activities. Joining Pinterest is free, but by invite. So if you need an invite, email me and I'll be sure to send you one. You can contact me in all the usual places and all the information is on the show notes. If you look out for the number of the show, you'll be able to go straight there. Thanks for listening to the show today, and don't forget to go on over to raisingplayfultots.com/survey. I really want to help you with raising a playful tot. Just before I go, with it being February and a leap year, how are you marking that day, the 29th? Any ideas? I have no ideas about what I'm going to do on the 29th of February. I've been racking my brain, so I'm coming to you. You all have such good ideas. What ideas have you got for marking the 29th of February? Would love to know what you've got planned. Take care and speak to you next time. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 84. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye.